Welcome to Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. This is the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. My name's Kelly Rayburn. Along with me is Michael Rubin.
Good morning, Kelly. Or is that good afternoon?
Or good evening. Whoever or wherever you are.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of negotiate with whoever, you know, if you're listening to us on any other days.
Time is relative, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's right.
Yeah. So one thing that isn't relative is some of the major things that are affecting our community right now.
Tell me about it.
And one thing that I don't usually get into is I have breathing problems. And
for some people, not just you.
Yeah. And I don't usually get into it because it's like there are people that are way worse than I am. Mm-hmm. At least I can still get around, maybe suffer a little shortness of breath. But mm-hmm. right now, with all the smoke from all these fires surrounding mm-hmm. us, and the air restrictions, air quality is somebody compared it to Beijing, a friend of mine. I said, I don't think we're quite that bad, but
yeah.
But it is pretty bad, especially if you do have serious breathing problems mm-hmm. with all the smoke that's lingering in the air.
Right.
You know, you can't see the mountains. You can't look across the water and see stuff.
You can't even see Vancouver Island.
No, you can't see that far out. Down where I live in White Rock, it's like it's really restricted. Mm-hmm. You see the water, but you can't see anything across it at all.
No,
so, and I just heard today that there's a firebug out there. Mm-hmm. It set like 10 more fires. Fortunately, I believe they were able to squash them pretty quickly. But why would you do that?
Squash a fire?
No, start the fire.
Oh, start the fire.
Why would you intentionally, accidentally?
Well, you've got careless people.
Yeah.
Careless people do stupid things.
Yeah. So
that's what I see.
Yep. Yeah. There were some photographs from up in Whistler, people walking around with a mask over their face.
Oh, for some people, yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't know how to advise people with something like that, because there's some advice that says not to wear the mask because it traps the smoke into your face better.
Really?
And there's others that say go ahead and wear the mask. So I don't know. it's everything's a mixed bag with the situation of that we're currently in here in Metro Vancouver. So
weird.
And for our friends out there in Whistler, they must really be suffering.
Yeah, of course.
So the fire is right next door to them, actually.
Yeah, Quartz, where Seashell is right now.
Yeah, and that's the other one is just blowing across the blown. What is that bay or whatever that inlet would be called? Is it blown straight across there from Seashell?
How Sound? We live close to where How Sound is.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's...
You grew up here. I didn't remember.
Okay.
So I'm still learning stuff.
I know. Like... But there are many places, like Horseshoe Bay is involved in it.
Yeah.
It's where you catch the ferries over to Nanaimo. Of course, you said something about Nanaimo.
Oh, yeah.
Water shortage.
Yeah. Nanaimo is at a level 4 water restriction.
Mm-hmm.
This means that you can't wash your car. You can't water your lawn.
No.
There's a couple other things that you can't do.
Get off my lawn.
But some of they are allowing you to still drip water shrubberies between 6 and 10 a.m. And if you have a vegetable garden, you're allowed to water, of course, your vegetable garden between 6 and 10 a.m. So...
But what if they're desperate?
The fines are going to be pretty high.
I mean, what if your strawberries go, we need more water. We don't care about any other else.
I was down at a berry farm in Abbotsford,
yes.
Right? And I think it was just maybe 2 weeks ago or something like that. And you know the big sprinkler heads that they have?
Yes.
You know, okay, I don't understand.
It's a farmyard down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't understand. Why would you set off the irrigation sprinkler during the hottest point of the day? I lived for 8 years in a desert.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to water your plants, you actually watered them between 1 and 5 a.m.
Overnight.
Yeah. Because the water would actually have a chance to soak into the ground. As opposed
True.
To be evaporated away by the sun.
Mm.
So if you're using this open head sprinkler in the middle of the day, it's a lot of the water has a chance to evaporate even before it hits the ground.
What good
is it doing your strawberry? Or your raspberry, blueberry? And from my understanding, the biggest offenders are actually cranberries. Just flood.
Yeah, it's the floods. Yeah.
Yeah.
And hot weather comes, evaporates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we don't get any cranberries for Thanksgiving. So.
I love cranberry sauce.
I bet you do. I bet you do.
Yeah, but it's like, okay, water restriction, you know. A couple spoonfuls less of cranberry sauce, and everybody has enough water to go around. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's something really important to our community, and mm-hmm. of course that's why we're bringing it up today. You know,
yep.
If we really think about it, they need that water to help with the fires.
Yes.
And I'm not just talking about the wildfires. Think about if your house fire and they go to flip on the fire hydrant and there's not enough water for pressure to put out the house fire.
That's the thing. And then we go back to our forestry where some careless person throws a match or anything
right.
and lights the fire. And they bring their water supplies, but they don't have enough water.
Right.
Even if the helicopters do try and find some water out of a lake or something,
yeah.
and it starts to
they do
get
the
less
scoop,
and less and
the
less.
Scoops and stuff like that, you know. As far as, like, there's other things, like you can, they can use, what was it, ammonium nitrate,
mm-hmm.
which it sounds counterintuitive because I know a lot of people thinking, like, wait a second, isn't that used to make explosives? But actually, it sucks the oxygen out of the fire.
Interesting.
And in the long run, it actually helps the forest regrow because it's plant fertilizer.
Mm.
But there's only but so much of that you can use, and then it starts to become a detriment when it gets into a water table.
Mm-hmm.
Again. Threatening water.
Right. Now, I don't know if you've seen the movie Fires of Kuwait.
No, I have not seen that one.
Now, this was a documentary on the, what is it, the Persian Gulf War. With, of course, Saddam Hussein. This was the original, the Persian Gulf War Part 1. Not Part 2, but Part 1.
Oh, with George Bush, the father.
Yeah, George Herbert Walker. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of documentaries on how Saddam Hussein added to, you know, catch those fires, catch those oil rigs on fire and everything. Mm-hmm. But there was a documentary, it was the aftermath. It was the aftermath of how these fires have been brought out. So they've been burning for days and days and days. And mm-hmm. And you see all these black clouds.
Toxic smoke. Yeah.
Fuming all of rain pretty much heading towards the eastern part of the area where after Iraq is and Saudi Arabia around that area. So cool. And it's around Kuwait as well. So a lot of smoke fumes are fuming from Kuwait going easterly through other countries in the Middle East. And there were many scientists that had to challenge to prevent from flaming the oil so that it could be preventable. And one of them was a kind of like a toxic explosion or something that puts into the base of the refinery.
The explosive, they place an explosive charge at the base of the they drop it down. They had to remove a fitting from off of the well,
mm-hmm.
and then they drop an explosive down into the well.
That's
and,
right,
and it sucks all the oxygen out so that the fire
stops. Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. So that was very interesting to see that kind of documentary. And I don't even know if it's still available on Amazon.com, but yeah, I know it was a documentary from IMAX Films. And yeah, so if you want to get a chance to go through Amazon.com and search word Fires of Kuwait, they probably might have it or not. But it's a great documentary. Those are the kinds of IMAX films I like to watch and stuff.
Yeah, but it's the immense heat and everything those mm-hmm. teams had to suffer to even get close to those fires.
Mm-hmm.
And then
back
you only
to the
have
forest fires. Yeah.
You only have a few seconds on those oil wells before back even to, with the protective suit that you don't start to mm-hmm. suffer like a severe sunburn and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know? So mm-hmm.
Just prepared for the summer heat and everything. And
well, we might see some relief with small amounts of rain.
Well, we heard that it's going to be raining on the weekend, but not very much rain.
It's not going to be enough to. And this is one of the reasons why I brought up the idea of this whole topic around this, mm-hmm. the water restrictions and needing the water for the forest fires versus all that stuff, is I've talked to a lot of people in the Metro Vancouver area,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, oh, well, we get tons of rain. We don't have to worry about water restrictions. It's a myth. We don't have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, I mean, that was probably back in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
During that time. But now things have changed.
Yeah. So the thing of it is this past winter, do you remember the amount of snow we got?
Yeah, it was very, not
very
snow
light,
at all.
No snow at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
very light to no snow at all.
Okay, the real problem is a lot of times we don't need the snow to appear here in Metro Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
We need the snow to appear up in Whistler, in Pemberton, and all those areas high up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Because we drink through the summertime, we drink the runoff.
Yeah.
And exactly. That didn't happen this year.
No, it didn't. And I know there's a company called Whistler Pure Water that makes those kind of mm-hmm. water productions, and I'm assuming that we're getting less of those kind of water bottles as well.
Yes, exactly. Mm. But what amazes me is like my one neighbor, and we actually even had him on the show, Peter Daniels. I was over at his house, and the White Rock Water Department came, and they issued him a fine. They gave him a warning
mm-hmm.
Because he had a sprinkler on.
Automatically. This is one of those automatic sprinklers. Okay.
Yeah. So he had to go shut it off.
Okay.
But what amazes me is like, all the condo complexes and everything, they have lush green grass. And mm-hmm. there's only one way you're going to wind up with lush green grass in this heat is
the brown.
You're sprinkling. You have your sprinklers running.
Running on automatic timings.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's like, so, and I see other people that are they're out there. They got to hose down their flowers and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, they don't... I just see that as...
Yeah, well, as I walk
where's
this...
Where's the respect for everybody
else? As I walk this morning on 38th Avenue, there was a sprinkler, one of those little wavy back and forth ones. And I'm assuming not only he was sprinkling his part of the lawn, he was also, I imagine he was sprinkling the gardens and stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of blocked the front of the sidewalk, so I had to wait until it moved backwards.
Yeah,
to go through.
See, I was going down the. It's not staying on the plants; it's being wasted down the street.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know,
partly, not all of it, but partly.
Part of it is right. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing is like you see some of these sprinklers are going off to the point that. The water is running down the street. It's like, don't you think you should have, at least if it's on a timer, adjust the timer so that it only goes off for 5 minutes, wets the ground a little bit so the grass has a little something, mm-hmm. and then it goes off.
Yes.
It doesn't need to run for 20 minutes or so.
No,
or
so. No, of course
it's
not.
Like, you know, stop it before it runs down the street. It's like... Mm-hmm. You know, we still need water to drink.
Absolutely.
You know, we still need water to shower, bathe in, and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you. I like clean clothes. we need water for that.
Well, we do need clean clothes. Yeah. Yes, of course. That's another thing we need to preserve. Yeah. Anyways, well, I'm going to take a break here, and we'll come right back with more things to talk about along the way. All right. We're coming right back. This is the Community Living Show.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the UBC and Kitsilano area at
Australian Boot Company, Banyan Books and Sound, The Bike Kitchen, The Cove, Dantry's Pub, Displace Hashery, Limelight Video, The Eatery, Fresh's Best Salsa, Gargoyle's Bar and Grill, Lotus Land Tattoo, Nuba Kitsilano, Prussian Music, Rufus's Guitar Shop, and the UBC Bookstore.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance. Get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Welcome back to Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm Kelly along with Michael Rubin. And, I mean, last week we talked about a little bit of Autism Speaks.
Yes.
And
they're a really great organization.
Mm-hmm, they are.
Yeah.
Well, I've got some more clips on Autism Speaks. This one's from D.C., District of Columbia, talking some more leadership. It's about a leadership summit, so let's have a listen to it right now.
Okay.
Well, good afternoon. I am delighted to join you. You've all had a great lunch, and now you're ready for an afternoon snooze, right? You're ready to get excited. See, we love to hear that. And I know that you all have already heard from Fred Upton, who chairs the Energy and Commerce Committee, and Diana DeGette, who's also on our committee. I serve as vice chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. So you've got a feel for where we are heading on the issues that are so vitally important to you. And we're going to continue that work. And you've heard about our work on 21st Century Cures. And we are so pleased to move that forward. I do want to introduce just a moment Dr. Karen Summer, who is our health policy director. Karen? Yeah. And Karen is here with me. She is doing a tremendous amount of work on 21st Century Cures. Let me just take a couple of minutes. I had a couple of notes here, but I've got microphones right in front of me. Hard to navigate to this. This looks like a puzzle or something I'd work with my grandkids, you know, figure this one out. I do want, first of all, to be sure that you all stay in touch with us as we go through the 21st Century Cures process. So you're going to find me, Facebook is Marsha Blackburn, Twitter at Marsha Blackburn, and then the website is blackburn.house.gov. Fred Upton's is upton.house.gov. You can get all of us through those and then link into the Energy and Commerce Committee. Now, I want to challenge you to make certain that you stay in touch, and then to parents and to those who are working on the autism issue that are there with you on this, forward different things that you're going to have from our website. What we want to do is make certain that people understand what we're seeking to accomplish and why we are going about with 21st Century Cures, why it is important for the NIH to continue research and to put money into these issues and to look for cures and better quality of life and better outcomes. And that's what everyone wants. And those children that are diagnosed and have autism and their parents and self-advocates, everybody wants freedom and independence and a great quality of life. We all share that goal. So our focus is going to be drilling down on that and finding a way to make that happen. I want to talk to you for just a second before I head back to the Hill for votes about the Software Act, which is a piece of legislation embodied in 21st Century Cures that deals with the mobile health apps. And there are now 97,000 mHealth apps in the App Store. And believe it or not, and about 15% of these are used by healthcare professionals. And the balance of these are used by individuals who maybe have chronic conditions, or they're monitoring, or they're used for education or health records, things of that nature. And what our legislation will do is put a process in place so that the FDA will have oversight of certain apps that maybe have a life or death consequence, so things like implants, things of that nature. But then others that are more informational, record-keeping, that require a professional to interface with, they go straight to the marketplace. So this is kind of the delivery system for much of what you find in the 21st Century Cures. And not only is it the delivery system, it becomes an access point for patients and for parents of patients to gather, keep, quantify, utilize different data that can be turned into helpful information to help you manage your situations. So this is a part of the legislation. Congressman Green and I've worked on this for about 3 years. And yes, indeed, it is like 21st Century Cures, bipartisan. Do you love that, having a bipartisan bill on Capitol Hill? And we actually moved the bill out of committee, and I'm sure Chairman Upton told you, voice vote, unanimous voice vote. So we look forward next week to having it on the floor to pass it. Then it goes over to the Senate, and Senator Alexander's committee is going to be shepherding the bill through. So you can cheer for us to get it off the House floor next week, and then following that, you're going to be cheering the Senate on to take up the bill and pass the bill so that we can get it to the president's desk, and then the focus can be on the NIH to put the research dollars where you and I and so many others want to see those research dollars placed. So it is a worthy goal, one we're going to be working diligently on to make certain that it happens. And, you know, really the components build on the Autism Cares bill that was passed. You all saw that signed into law, and what we are doing builds on that. So all of these will lead to the greater outcomes, greater information and knowledge, and more research that will help us to make certain that we're looking at cures and therapies and all those components that yield a better quality of life. So thank you for letting me jump by and say hello and be involved in your conference. I've got to head back to the floor. We have a vote that's being called right now. So I've got to navigate DC traffic and get up there and cast my vote. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I've asked my colleague Diana to get to come up and join me, and we've actually done this, I don't know how many zillions of times together. So we have a little slick together, and what I miss, she's going to hit and whatever. And if we have time for a question or two, we'll try and do that. First of all, thank you, really, from the bottom of our hearts. We've both been members of the Autism Caucus for a long, long time. We've seen firsthand back in our districts, that is for sure. Just a little side note, my church has actually opened up their big basement. It's huge to an autism center, and they're looking for more space, because even though it is big, there's such a need for what's going on. And so appreciate all you do, the parents, the researchers, everything. And this organization is really critical. I think this Autism Speaks has maybe done more than any other group to try and help us get our bill across the line. And as you may know about our bill, Diana and I started working a year and a half ago, December of 2013, to really put together a bipartisan bill that not only dramatically increases money for the NIH, in this case $10 billion that we forced the appropriators to spend on health research, but also really to work with not only the FDA, but the NIH, our university researchers, pharma, bio, the administration. Sylvia, Secretary of HHS, has been particularly helpful. The former FDA director is particularly helpful. But what advice do they have for us that can really expedite the approval of drugs and devices to find the cures for the diseases that impact every family? So from autism to Alzheimer's to cancer to lupus, I mean, you name it, we are now reaching out into all those disease-centered groups to really help us get our bill across the line. So for a year and a half, we had perhaps as many 30, 40, even more discussions, subcommittee hearings, roundtables, not only here in D.C., but across the country as well, just listening to the experts. And you all were the Autism Speaks was, in fact, on some of those panels. And we developed a bipartisan legislation which passed the end of last month, 51-0. Now, I got to tell you, there's not a lot of bills that pass 51-0. But that's not our goal, to pass a bill in committee. Our goal is to get a bill signed into law by the president. And our goal has always been to get it done before the end of this year. So if you go back to ninth grade civics, got to pass a bill in the House, in the Senate, they're always different. Houses, I've learned, is always better. You got to work to get them done, and then you send it back to the president for them to get signed. And this is where we really need you. So we've only had, I'm not kidding, about 4 full legislative days since we actually marked up the bill. We have already close to 150 co-sponsors of the bill. And we're probably going to file it this week, which means nobody can co-sponsor afterwards. But our goal is to try to get as many as 350 votes on the House floor. And it could come as early as next week. Why do we need that many votes? Because we have to show the Senate that indeed it is bipartisan. There's no question about that. But the need is there. And actually, we start the additional money for the NIH as early as October 1st. It starts fiscal year 16. So every week we go without getting it signed is money that the Francis Collins and the NIH is not going to be able to figure out how do we work on all these things that impact all of us. So particularly this week that you're here, as you talk, Kelly Ayotte, I know she spoke before us. She's been a great friend. There's not a companion bill yet in the Senate. And we've been sitting down with the senators. And again, we started in December of 13, so we've got a very comprehensive bill. We're trying to encourage the Senate just to do a minimal. Just do a little bill, all right? After, you know, pick the subject. And then we'll go to conference, and we'll have it all swallowed up as one. But what helps us is to get that big vote in the House that then drives the Senate to get it across the finish line so that we can get it to the president. And it's so important. So it's the bill number is H.R. 6. John Boehner gave us one of the top 10 numbers in the House. It shows the importance of it. And I got to say that leaders on both sides, from Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, have been there from the very beginning on the Democratic side. And on the House side, obviously, John Boehner, but Kevin McCarthy before him, Eric Cantor, Steve Scalise as a co-sponsor, the whip on the Republican side. We're all encouraged. We've got just a couple little things we got to tie up, loose ends. Hopefully we can get it done by the end of today. This sort of falls on my shoulders so that our leadership then can perhaps schedule it as early as next week. So a lot of meetings going on. Let me introduce my partner in this great effort, Diana DeGette from Colorado, who, by the way, came to my district, Michigan, you know, so it's over here. I'm going to her district end of next week. Here she is, my partner.
Thanks, Fred. Fred's coming to my district next week.
Just let people know that the volume is very droppable. We did it as maximum as we can to do this podcast there.
Such an important important ally for us in this drafting of this legislation, from the early conversations that we had to the roundtables and the hearings that we've had to the input on the various discussion drafts and documents that we've had. It's been tremendously important. As Fred said, when we started this endeavor, what we wanted to do, we wanted to think big, and you participated in that thinking, because what we wanted to do was to take advantage of the recent mapping of the human genome and to take advantage of electronic medical records and the ability to aggregate data, and then to use those two very powerful issues to work with the NIH and the FDA to expedite the way we come up with cures for diseases. And I said to Fred that the way we could fail is if we didn't think big enough. Well, we're really proud of ourselves, and we're proud of you and the other advocacy groups who have helped us, because we did think big. And this bill really is an effort. It's $10 billion more in mandatory spending for the NIH, as Fred said, but it's also $4.5 billion in programmatic spending for the NIH and money for the FDA, so once we find the cures, we can actually expedite the approval.
I just want to pause it right there. That's just an example of what's happening over in the United States right now. I'm going to go forward to what's happening with Autism Canada. You can always check out their website as well, autismcanada.org, and find out more information on what they do as well.
Yeah.
Here's Heather McKenzie on, this was like 7 months ago, self-regulation to the road to the greater autonomy and fulfillment. Here's a little segment on it on the Canadian perspective.
Is helpful? Consider donating at autismcanada.org.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you. And thank you to Autism Canada and to Lori and our wonderful accidental encounter at IMCAR.
The Canadian one now. Sorry.
Excuse me. Actually, I barged into her conversation and said, do you mind if I sit down? And I started yakking, of course. So as I was thinking about this, I've been in this field for 40 and a bit years, which is a long, long, long time. And so I thought, well, you know, what visions do I have? Am I on okay?
I was just trying to find a better view in this
place. A better place? Was that good? It was just, no. Excuse me. So I was thinking that, you know, in all the hundreds of children and some adults and young adults that I've worked with, what do I want? What is my vision for them? And the biggest things were is I want them to be able to make decisions on their own. I want them to be as independent as possible. I want them to feel competent. I think all of us in this room can feel that. And, you know, we'd all like to feel competent. And we'd like to have a sense of personal safety, that we're not going to be bullied, we're not going to be harassed in any way. We can live a safe life. And we can cope in everyday settings. They're not so stressful that we can't exist within daily settings. And feel a sense of satisfaction in their lives. And pursue their passions and affinities. As we've heard from a number of people, those are good things. And we can help channel those. And really, when you watch somebody with autism who is exercising that affinity, that special interest, you see them, you see that look on their faces and that calm and that just wonderful focus. And that's the kind of thing that we want to help people on the spectrum feel. And have at least one good friend and confidant. I don't care if they're social butterflies. I really wish that everyone could have one good friend. And when we look at, you know, how close we are, when we look at the adult outcomes, we say, yeah, we're not there yet. And this is, you can see in the lime green color, those are sort of typical expectations when these surveys were done. The employment is about 95%. It's probably less than that right now. But at that time, in the countries where these surveys were done, it was about 95%. And you look at our people with autism, the low estimate is in the blue, and the high estimate is in the rust tone. And you see that, you know, that it's like 42% of people with autism, that's a high estimate, are employed in any way. That's not right. It should be way higher than that. You look at graduated from college or university, how low that is. It's about 60% in the general population, and it's around the 20% mark for people on the autism spectrum. And that's regardless of whatever their testable IQ is or anything. It doesn't matter. It's that our people are not, our people on the autism spectrum are not able to pursue many of these things. And then you look at lives on their own, you know, about 50%. Has friends, and that saddens me deeply, that's about 42% as the high estimate. Is married, and that has its own stresses and strains, but, you know, is the person married? And that's, those are very, very low. And you think, well, it doesn't matter if you're married or not, but having that enduring, close, intimate relationship with another person is the important part of that. And then you look at mental health problems. And by the way, today is International Mental Health Day. So that fits in very nicely. And you can see that there are ongoing mental health and behavioral issues for people as they become adults. And then we look at families with families. Well, not yet. Families with children with autism are less likely to attend religious services and participate in community activities and events. And many of our therapies, not yet. We've heard about some, you know, there are indeed some evidence-based practices out there. But, like in the example of social skills training, there have been some interesting meta-analyses, you know, drawing together a large number of studies, looking at the results, and here are some quotes from them, and where the generalization of the learning is very poor, and the maintenance tends to be low.
And you can follow all that on Vimeo.com. Search word Autism Canada. That was Heather McKenzie, physical doctor for self-regulation, doing a road to greater autonomy and fulfillment. Hard to pronounce it. But anyways, but you can check more information on their website, autismcanada.org. We're going to come right back with more stuff and to finish off the show here on the Community Living Show, and we'll be right back. We will be right back.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion.
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What's this Pilate? He fiddled well.
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Yep, Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in. 3:30 to the Nod Rush Show. What's in ya?
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
This is the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. I've got here on article on Nanaimo and Parksville we were just talking about just a moment ago. Effective today, July 9th, Parksville and the District of Nanaimo moved to a level 4 water restrictions as extreme drought continues on Granville Island. They are the first municipalities in British Columbia to do a level 4 restrictions, whereas I'm assuming Vancouver's a level 3, am I right?
Yeah.
Level 3 or level 2? Okay,
something
one or
like
the
that.
Other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, the decision was made after reduction in emergency water storage levels, which could severely impact the area's ability to fight a large fire or after using water restrictions to fight fire, impact the ability to meet water requirements for residents and businesses. At this time, Vancouver Island is ranked the extremely dry drought conditions by the province. Environment Canada is predicting higher than normal temperature and lower than normal predictions to continue well into the fall.
Yeah, well, essentially, I think we're going to have to wait for a snowfall to actually happen, which is wintertime, in mm-hmm. order for the water levels to start recovering. If that makes any sense to anybody out there at all, but it's like...
In other words, bring your own water bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sort of thing, so... Yeah, sad but true.
Yeah.
Sad but true.
I was talking to somebody else that they grew up on like one of the, he didn't say which coastal island it was. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny because he's talking about water restrictions and he's a plumber.
Right.
But he was saying that being surrounded by salt water, you appreciate the fresh water that much more because it's like a drought can happen way faster because you can't tap any of the water surrounding you. Mm-hmm. You only tap what's there on the island. You know?
Yeah. I was thinking of the sulfur or whatever it is. It's interesting to come up with salt water and I don't know. I don't know if it makes this the sulfur or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in other places like mining countries where, I don't know, water, I mean, there are water in the mining areas where it's all soaked and it's like sulfur or something. I don't know.
Oh, the sulfur from the mines, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because they're using like a sulfuric acid or something like that to make the ore show up in the soil.
Mm.
They're using it to get to the ore, to clean the ore up so before they get it into the smelting process to the metals are.
I'm just wondering if it's anything to do with the evaporation of the water as well.
Yeah. But a lot of what's going on right here is due to the fact that we had such a mild winter. We had, it was a non-winter, you know. I didn't even think I put on my heavy coat the whole winter.
Well, I had to put my jacket in my backpack in case if it does rain.
Yeah.
I have it as an emergency. So.
Yeah. And then my friends in Whistler who run like the snowmobiling operations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year they didn't lose any money because they sell packages to other places and package of hours, and those other places actually sell the hours to individuals. So, but they had to buy the hours up for the snowmobiles to begin with, the snowmobile tours to begin with. So, they didn't lose any money this year, but this the this winter coming, they said that they may have trouble selling because the winter was that mild that they may actually have trouble selling packages this year.
Hmm.
So, but that's how mild of a winter it was up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there weren't a lot of good skiing days.
Mm.
So, you know, but it's weather with planet. There's only so much we can do to control it. There's things that we can do to make sure that we keep our resources useful to us.
Mm-hmm.
But weather, in some respects, there's not a lot we can do to control it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So, I just want to talk about some upcoming events that are coming up. I'm starting to get involved with the Shaw Community Television, which, of course, is called Access Day. Now, Access Day is not Access Day.
Access TV.
Access Television, thank you very much. I'm thinking Access Day because we already did that.
Yeah, we just
CITR
did that
the
other
a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now. And Access TV, now, Access TV is pretty much similar to what you hear on Co-op Radio. I know Molly Karen is the host of the show. She does another show called It Takes a Village.
Yes.
And Gunnar Jill Sullivan, of course, she does some broadcasts here as well on flagship CITR and other NCRA radio stations as well. So she does the Aboriginal stuff on
the Red Jam Slam.
Mm-hmm.
Wind Spirit Whispers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
So she does a co-host for Access TV as well, bringing in some Aboriginal guests and First Nations people as well.
There's for those who actually have watched Access TV and really like the look and feel of the show itself. I'm going to give a quick shout out to my friend Lucas, who is the editor and one of the producers of the show. So,
So
he does a great job.
So in the near future, it's a possibility I'm going to be doing some more issues on people with special needs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that. And right now we're doing a documentary on name city names, more like name the streets, name the schools and stuff that used to, you know, became populated and stuff like that. So we're doing a thing called Street Names on Access TV, and in the help of Molly Caron, the host of the show, I'm helping out with the narration and stuff like that. So that's going to be involved. And then the election is coming up in October. So some of the politicians will be involved into the show as well. So be like five questions of what do you do in the area? What do you do if anything about legalizing marijuana? I know we'll probably be on the topic as well as part of the national debate for that matter. And of course, my perspective dealing with self-advocates as well. So there are a lot of issues to talk about to these MPs and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we're in the midst of our production company. We're helping another company called Sparks. Is how I know also how I know Lucas on Access TV. We're fundraising to build a drama about the legalization of the effects of the legalization of marijuana from those who use it to those who like the what would formerly be the illegal grow up now mm-hmm. becoming legitimate. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a pretty exciting movie to have happen, to see what this actual social impacts via this drama could be on the legalization of marijuana, mm-hmm. like as the industry grows and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So that's the taping that is coming up on Sunday. And I don't know if it's going to be aired on broadcast throughout the month. Of course, it's a monthly show on Shaw Television. So that's my event. What's your event that you're going to be inventing?
When was that particular movie about the legalization of marijuana? Mm-hmm. And we're doing work with Sensible BC on some other projects.
Okay.
Again, it's about the legalization of marijuana.
Okay.
One of the things that was studied with is the legalization in the U.S. with Washington and Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado has actually opted to drop the tax, the rate of tax on the sale of marijuana,
right,
in order to end the black black market sale of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very interesting strategy. So it's something that we should look closely at and see how the social impacts that happen from that.
Should be interesting.
So, yeah. It's legalization of marijuana is becoming a very hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
And with our friends with the invisible disabilities, they use a lot of that also. So mm-hmm. we're ready to go?
Yeah, we're ready to go. So, yes. So that's... So that's probably your event that is coming up, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the movie. Look for it.
Yeah, look for it. All right. We're close to the top of the hour. Thank you very much, Michael, for coming in.
Sure.
As always.
Yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow on the other station, Co-op Radio. So.
See you tomorrow at 2:30 or whatever
it's 2
time
o'clock.
You actually...
2 o'clock tomorrow.
2 o'clock, yeah.
So that's the other station on Co-op Radio. We'll be back, again tomorrow and then, of course, next week as well. We leave you with a song from Jim Lapap, and the song is Grunge by the Bunny Guitar. It's a 90s rock version. I hope you enjoy it. Have a good day, everybody.
Bolehkah saya menolong saudara bertiga?
Tuan, kita tiga orang boleh main muzik. Bolehkah kita bikin satu orkes?
Boleh. Saudara main apa?
Saya main rhythm guitar.
Rhythm guitar? Coba. Bagus, bagus. Saudara?
Saya main bass guitar.
Bass guitar. Coba. Bagus. Saudara main drum?
Saya main drum.
Coba. Nanti saya tunjuk cara-caranya, ya?
Baik, tuan.
Irama. put me through my guys.